Shameless Media.
This episode of the Shameless Book Club is brought to you by Cetaphil and their range of dermatologist-tested products to suit everyone. Hey, book lovers! I had the pleasure of interviewing Emily Henry, who has a new book coming out today called Funny Story. You might be familiar with Emily's other work, including Book Lovers, Beach Read, People We Meet on Vacation, and Happy Place. Emily knows a thing or two about how to write a good romance novel, and I love talking to her about the genre. We hope you enjoy listening to this conversation. Hey, Emily, welcome to the Shameless Book Club, and congratulations on your new book, Funny Story.
Thank you so much. I'm so excited to be here.
I remember reading your book, Beach Read, back in 2020, and since then you've released another 4 romance books. So if you do the math, that's one book for every year, which is just insane.
Thank you. I agree. Send that to my publisher.
How does it feel to have so much of your work out in the world?
It feels amazing. I mean, I'm joking and laughing about that pace because it is a very intense pace, but it has been a whirlwind in the best way. And every time I'm talking to someone, you know, a fellow writer who's like, you know, don't you want to take a year off? Don't you want some time off? Whatever. I always describe it as being on this amazing carousel and feeling like, I don't know, it's like I'm not ready for the ride to be over. It's been really, really fun to just live in this world for the last 5-ish years.
Yeah, so your last 5 books have had the same warm and cozy feel to them. Is there a particular formula you follow when writing romance?
Romance is the genre that gets the worst rap as far as having a formula, but it's kind of weird because most books follow a formula to an extent. Most movies follow a formula to an extent. You know, it's like with a murder mystery, the murderer gets unveiled. Like, that's what you're reading for. And the way that I think of it as a formula is I'm using this love story every single time to move these characters through a kind of growth. And that's what I love about love stories in general, is the fact that when you fall in love, you have all of your fears kind of like triggered at the same time. It's so fun, but it's terrifying. And you just like, you really find out where you are mentally and emotionally when you're falling in love. Like, oh, I'm not doing as well as I thought I was. Or like, I feel very safe and at peace because I'm so settled in other elements of my, or aspects of my life. So I like that when you tell a love story, you have this natural way of pulling these two people through kind of intense growth that I think mirrors what happens in real life when you fall in love, in the best case scenario. And so the piece of it that is kind of formulaic to me is that I'm always specifically pairing up characters who I think have things that they need to work through that will be sort of tripped wires with each other. You know, like one of them has this problem and that will be exactly exacerbated by this other person's like problem. And I think that's what makes some love stories like so satisfying to me personally, even as a reader, is just the feeling that these two specific people, their love story and then also their conflict, their resolution, all of it is so built into who they are as people and where they need to go, like mentally and emotionally. So I think that's the piece of it that's like a formula to me, where I really try and build the story around this character's specific thing that they're kind of trying to work through. And like, you know, Beach Read starts with like the line about having a fatal flaw. And that is kind of the trick for me, the formula. It's like, what is your fatal flaw? What is the thing that you have been using as a coping mechanism for years? And how can we push you past it? How can you find a way to let go of it and have a more full experience of the world?
Yeah, that's one of the things I really love about your books. I think it always starts with self-love.
Yeah. I mean, it's so much better to fall in love when you have self-love. When you don't have self-love and you fall in love, every second really is terrifying because you're just like, the feeling of need and then also the feeling of like not being enough is just such a threat. It's like, if this person goes away, then like I lose everything. I'm alone. I'm, you know, worthless, whatever. And it's so much more fun to fall in love when you feel good about yourself and when you like your life and this person can come in and challenge you in new ways and open up new parts of you, but they're not like completely collapsing everything that you've worked for and are building around yourself.
Where do you get the inspiration for these characters?
It's a little bit different every time, but I think I'm usually kind of thinking about what I'm trying to work on in myself to some extent, or something that I already feel like I have worked on in myself. Happy Place is the most obvious example where this character is so people-pleasing and conflict-averse that it actually leads to bigger issues in her life. And that's something that I have experienced and a lesson I've learned time and time again. When you try so hard to avoid any kind of confrontation, it actually keeps you from being able to be close to people. It keeps you from true intimacy because you have to be able to be honest about how you're feeling. And if you're just like so afraid of ever having any kind of discord, then you're usually just not even giving that person a chance to know the real you, because you're just like, you hurt my feelings, but I'm just not going to say anything about it and just push it away, whatever. So a lot of times that's kind of like the starting point, is like the thing that is like the worst about them, the thing that's like messing up their life. And then it kind of gets built around there.
Yeah. What I found really interesting in my research is that you haven't always been a romance novelist.
Yeah.
What made you make the jump to romance?
Well, something really fun, you know, just from a personal standpoint, is that I wasn't trying to make a jump. And I think sometimes like the things that we make that we like have no stake in, like it's like, this isn't a risk, this isn't scary, whatever. It just opens up your ability to make it without worrying about all the little details. Mm-hmm. And with Beach Read, my first romance novel, it was something that I really did genuinely write just for fun. And I had been publishing young adult novels for a few years at that point, and they were all sort of genre bent, and there was often like a love story involved, but it wasn't the central plot. I really missed that feeling of writing before publishing, that feeling of like, this is just for me and I'm so excited about it that I like have to get it out as fast as possible, and like I'm not worrying about if it's perfect, if it makes sense, any of that. I'm just writing from that place of creative flow. And so with Beach Read, it was that exact experience. It was like, I'm probably never going to even try and publish this. I hadn't really read a lot in the genre at that point even. I became a romance reader really after that, and now I love it.
Oh my God, that's
nuts. I know, it really is. And I will say, I read a bunch while and before I edited Beach Read when we actually sold it, because I was like, I'm not going to go into this genre without having done my research and, you know, paid my respects to the greats and whatever. But I loved romantic comedies, like films, growing up, and I think that was more of what was influencing my writing. And then I wrote it and sat on it for a couple of years. And then I watched these other authors kind of trigger this huge boom in romance publishing, where it was extending beyond the traditional tried and true romance readers and finding a new audience as well. And like, I think the two authors who always come to mind right away are Jasmine Guillory and Helen Huang, who both had kind of like big breakout romance novels that were funny and sweet and had more serious issues threaded through and felt grounded in a way while still being a joyful escape. And the thing is, like, when I wrote Beach Read, it was really just because, like I said, I wanted to work on something that just felt really good and just for me. And also the world felt like a steaming pile of shit. And I wanted to just spend some time in a beautiful love story on a warm beach. Like, that's what I wanted. And so once I started reading romance, it was that same thing. It was like, oh, there are so many of these. There are so many of these novels. And when the world feels really overwhelming and you can't focus on thriller, sci-fi, anything like that, when it all just feels like too much, romance is this safe space that you can pick up a book and you know that there will be tension and conflict and plot. But at the end, there's this safety net of the happily ever after, because even when things go wrong, you know that if nothing else, these two characters will at least find their way to each other.
You're absolutely right about it being like a huge boom, because I even have a stat here that I wrote down. Like, Publishers Weekly reported a 52.4% increase in romance book sales after lockdown in 2022, like, that's insane.
52%.
I know, I was shocked. So I think you were bang on when you said it was to do with escapism. That's such a huge reason why, especially during lockdown.
Totally. It's tricky because while I do think there's real escapism in my books and in the genre at large, a lot of times like bad stuff does happen in these books. I don't know. Have you read any Vari McFarlane?
No, I haven't.
Okay. First of all, you must. She's amazing. you must. But I think of her books as a really good example. They're shelved probably more as women's fiction, not as romance, but there's always a romance, like a love story in them. And they're very, very, very funny. But one of her books like literally opens with the main characters, like two best friends dying in a car accident. And you're like sobbing within pages. It's kind of like Pixar's Up situation where you're just like, this is so devastating. Mm. And then she gets you laughing and she shows you this character healing and falling in love. And it's such a beautiful experience because it's like very cognizant of the fact that life can be so excruciatingly painful and hard. And then it's juxtaposing one of the most beautiful experiences that a person can have, which is just like finding a person that you connect with who just brings out a new part of your heart that you've never seen before. Like, I write my books to feel like vacation. So there's that element that is escapism. But there also is always very real hurt and trauma and all of those other things. And I'm just trying to present like a balanced view of that. And I don't want readers to feel bogged down in the real life stuff. I want them to feel like it's a safe experience if they're having a bad day to pick up one of my books and read it. But I think part of what makes it feel like a safe experience is because you're seeing these characters in this moment of joy and hope, but you're aware of their real life beyond the story, like before it and after it. And so it's this reminder that like, this is real too. Like the bad stuff is real. Mm. That happens. We deal with it. We grieve, we mourn, we fight. All of those things are real. But the joy is also real. And you can focus on that sometimes. And like, that is a kind of escapism. But I think it's a really valuable one because it's prioritizing the joy as just as important and valid as the pain of being alive.
I love that. I also really like the use of the word safe there.
Yeah.
Because I imagine for a lot of cozy romance readers, a safe space is these books. Like, especially for people that like regularly experience things like sexism, homophobia, or racism. Can you speak to that a bit more?
Yeah, totally. I mean, something that people kind of pick up on and tend to ask about in interviews is the fact that in my books, pretty much every time there's like a sex scene, there's like a beat of the story that is, where is the condom? It's like, we need a condom. And people have asked me, like, is that intentional? How intentional is? What's the point? Are you like trying to make a point there? And what you were talking about, that safety aspect of it, is sort of the point to me, where it's like, I know that in real life, people aren't always totally responsible with those decisions. But like the idea is that like a woman should feel safe with her partner. Her partner should be considering that, should be offering that, should be like aware that like there's a risk for her in all this. I mean, there's risk for people of any genders with unprotected sex. Yeah. So I think even just like little things like that kind of feed into creating a world that like is our world, but just like a tiny bit better. But I think, you know, like we've been talking about, there's still some of the hard stuff from real life in the stories.
Yeah, it's not like completely idyllic.
Yeah, it's not completely idyllic. But yeah, I don't write racism and homophobia into my books. I'm like, yeah, I know those are real, but like, I don't want my readers to be forced to think about that. And again, no shade like against writers who do specifically use those issues in their books and like tackle them. Like, that's also beautiful. But when I'm writing, I'm just sort of like, I don't know. I want them to feel like this is a world just slightly removed from ours where that's not something that they have to even think about.
Yeah, I personally think it's really important to have lots of books that have happily ever afters for marginalized people.
Yeah.
But happily ever afters aren't necessarily anything new either. They've been around for a long time. Take fairy tales as the obvious example.
Yeah.
Do you think there's something very human about seeking a happy ending?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me personally, someone who has a fair bit of anxiety, I spend a lot of time, I don't know about you, I spend a lot of time just kind of wondering if the hard things are worth it in exchange for like the good stuff. For example, I have a very old dog right now. And, you know, I'm like bracing for when we have to say goodbye to her. And that's terrible. And I like also spend a lot of time avoiding the thought and delving into escapism. But thinking about that and thinking like, well, what will I do? Like, will I get another dog? Like, knowing already the pain that's looming around the corner, is it worth it to invite this new love into your life and your heart, knowing that that means you're going to have your heart broken eventually?
Yeah.
And that's kind of life. Like, that little microcosm to me just is life. Like, that is what it all is. Every decision you make, it's like you can have your big, beautiful life, but that means you're leaving room for severe heartbreak. And to me, the answer is yes, it is worth it. But I also feel like every single book I write, I'm sort of like reminding myself of that or convincing myself of that. So I think that search for happily ever after doesn't come from believing that maybe everything will just be fine, But I do think it comes from that place of wanting someone to assure us or to give us the answer that, like, yes, when you balance things against each other, the joy and the pain, you know, the misery, the love, all of that, your life will have been so worth the time that you had. And I don't know if that's always true, but I want it to be true. And I think about all of the worst loss and pain that I've experienced, and it only happened because of really great love. And yeah, so I kind of think that's what the impulse is we want to assure ourselves that it's worth it. And, you know, I think it is.
This kind of reminds me of a quote. I'm probably going to butcher it. It's from your book. It's from Book Lovers. I think it was like, I'm happy for now.
Yeah.
Everything you just said reminded me of that quote.
Yeah. Well, I think ultimately, like I said, that's kind of just every book I'm writing. I'm kind of getting back to that point, because I think all of the things that make love scary, it really is just experience. Like, you've experienced loss before. You've experienced feeling rejected, like you've experienced being abandoned. All of those things that are just human experiences make it harder and harder to put yourself out there, not just like in a romantic way, but like even in friendships. It's hard and scary to trust new people. And yeah, I don't know. But I also am like, but that's the greatest joy on earth too. It's terrifying, but it's like the best thing that you can have is like to know someone really well and be loved by them and love them.
We all want to feel healthy and confident in our skin, but for many of us, that means spending hours trying to find the right products and building the perfect skincare routine. That's time we could be spending on things we love, such as hanging out with loved ones or, of course, reading. Luckily, Cetaphil is here to save the day. They have worked with dermatologists for 75 years to build a range of cleansers and moisturizers designed to suit all skin types, even the most sensitive ones. With their carefully developed blend of ingredients, Cetaphil's making sure your skin is being looked after with minimal efforts. Take your first step to happier and healthier skin and shop Cetaphil and their entire range now, online or in-store at Chemist Warehouse. Thank you so much to Cetaphil for making this episode of the Shameless Book Club possible. So as I touched on earlier, there are so many wholesome romances with happily ever afters on bestsellers. These include The Love Hypothesis, Icebreaker, The Spanish Love Deception, and you mentioned The Wedding Date. Mm-hmm. I could go on, but what are your favorite books in this genre?
Ooh, oh my gosh, this is going to be so hard. Well, and also I feel like there's romantic comedies and then there's more like romantic dramas. And so there's kind of I like both.
Yeah, I'll extend it out to movies as well.
Oh my gosh. Like, there's so many. I mean, it probably won't surprise anyone that like the Nora Ephron classics are some of my favorite movies mm-hmm. of all time, specifically When Harry Met Sally and You've Got Mail. But I also really like a lot of the like old 1940s movies that I feel like influenced the 90s movies. Nora Ephron's parents mm-hmm. actually like directed and I think wrote as well a movie called The Desk Set that I love. That's Katharine Hepburn and Spencer Tracy. And it's also is like weirdly similar to You've Got Mail thematically, but there's so many. But then books, there's just so much good stuff that's come out recently or is about to come out. The first one that comes to mind is more of a romantic drama, and it's a little bit of a genre bender, but Tia Williams' new book, A Love Song for Ricky Wilde.
Oh my
Wilde.
God, I love her.
Yes. Okay, so have you read Ricky Wilde yet?
No, I haven't. I've only read Seven Days in June and The Perfect Find.
Well, you are in for a real treat. You're going to love it. It's so good. And it was one of those books that for days after I finished reading it, I'd be in the middle of the day and I would think, oh, I'm reading something really good right now. I can't wait for it to be bedtime so I can like read a little chapter before I go to bed. Oh, and then I'd remember that I had already finished it and it was that book. It is. And a bad feeling. You're just like, give me more. But I feel like my success rate for reading romance novels is just so much higher than my overall, like, I loved it rate for just other genres. There's so much good stuff and so much of it is so character-based. And I think that's what I'm really a sucker for, is feeling like I really know the characters and care about them so much that I'm rooting for them desperately. And I think there are just so many fantastic romance writers who are doing that. Kennedy Ryan is another writer who is one of my kind of gold standard romance novelists. She just had a new book come out called This Could Be Us. Her book before that was called Before I Let Go, and it was gorgeous, second chance romance. Christina Lauren, that's like who I pick up if I want something fun and light. Very funny and heartwarming and sexy. And one of my favorite books coming out this year too is by Yulin Kwong, who's actually writing and adapting a couple of my projects. But she has her first romance novel coming out this month. It's called How to End a Love Story. And it is another one of those books that's like devastating, heart-wrenching.
Are the wholesome romances like Red, White, and Royal Blue, To All the Boys I've Loved Before, and Heartstopper have also been adapted recently. And not one, but three of your books have also been optioned for film adaptations. So these are Book Lovers, Beach Read, and People We Meet on Vacation. How much are you involved in that process of adapting your books into movies?
Well, it's really different for all of them. And it's also cool because they're all set up in very different places. And so the way that things develop and move is really different. Like People We Meet on Vacation is with a big studio, it's with Sony. So they've got their way of doing things. And then Book Lovers is with like an indie outfit called Tango. So it's like different for all of them. But I've been really lucky that the directors for Beach Read and People We Meet on Vacation have been really, really communicative with me and kept me up to date on everything that they're thinking and like frequently come to me with questions. Yulin is really, rather than just inventing things wholesale, if she needs something new that's not in the book, she's coming to me and kind of brainstorming with me. And, you know, she has like final say, it's her thing, but she also really wants it to feel like it matches the book. So yeah, it's all very exciting.
There are rumors circulating that AOA Debris and Paul Mescal might be starring in an adaptation. I know you probably can't confirm or deny this, but can you let me know if you think they're good casting choices for any of the adaptations that are coming out?
Look, I have been bringing up Io's name in meetings. For years now, because there are these three adaptations that have been going 4 years. And I do genuinely think she could do anything she wanted at all. There are so many talented actors out there, and we're gonna get great casts for everything. But yeah, I think obviously they'd both be phenomenal. They're wonderful, talented actors.
Which one would you want them to be in the most?
Okay, I'll say, so actually this is just like a little inside scoop. This is not because of a little inside scoop. A while back, probably months back, I was told by someone more involved in the industry of Hollywood. They were like, don't ever be like, this is who I want for a movie. Because then if they don't end up saying like, yeah, I want to do that, then like the next person you go to, they're like, oh, I'm second choice. So I'm sort of like, I never thought about that. And luckily, I just usually don't have an answer when people are asking fan casting questions, because I'm like, I can't picture anyone. Like, I can't picture my characters, whatever. So yeah, with that also being in the back of my head, like not pissing anyone off, I don't think I have a favorite. I just think that they'd be amazing for anything. I think. Just repeating the same thing over and over again.
People online get so passionate about casting choices.
They do. Yeah, it's amazing. And the other thing is, like, I'm ultimately not the one casting a movie. So there's kind of some freedom in that, because if I do say, like, oh, I'm really excited about a person, ultimately, it's not me who makes that call. I'm just kind of like weighing in. I'm just kind of paying attention to what the readers think about people and how I react to them, and then bringing that to like a larger conversation.
I love how passionate romance readers are. And I see like,
me too,
especially because I'm like very much involved in the online community of BookTok, I see a lot of them copying a lot of flack for reading romance books as well. Why do you think that happens?
Yeah. I mean, I'm sad that it's still happening, because growing up, like I said, I definitely had all of these misconceptions and sort of like biases against romance that just sort of sprung from the ether. Like, it wasn't like I spent time thinking about it. It just seemed like that was the prevailing attitude. I really feel like I was part of a generation that privileged anything that was more aimed toward, like marketed toward boys. Like, that was what was taken seriously. And so I definitely remember when I was younger, feeling like the music I liked, the movies I liked, the shows I liked, all of that was sort of being filtered through what's cool and what's not cool. And what's cool was usually like stuff geared toward or centering around boys and men. Mm-hmm. And so those were my favorite things at the time. I was like, this is cool. And I'm smart. So I like things that smart people like, and didn't really notice that it was like being so heavily influenced by like gendered perceptions of like, you know, whatever. I feel like every boy I knew at some point had like a Reservoir Dogs poster in their room. And like, I've never seen that movie. But I probably at one point would have been like, yeah, I love that. So I don't know. Like, I think there's some of that. I probably would have had a better answer for you years ago, but now I'm so deep into the world of romance and I've spent so much time thinking about this that I am truly like baffled.
That's a good place to be.
It is. I'm like, I'm baffled. I'm like, I couldn't begin to guess what people's hang up is about this. Like, what have you got against love? What have you, like, I don't know. I don't know. It's weird to me. And like, you know, also because I've been now having a lot more conversations with people in the film industry and seeing like that world is, I think, way further behind than publishing is as far as like how it's embracing romance and its attitudes about romance and whether romance can be taken seriously and whatever. It's just a bizarre thing where I'm like, well, Marvel movies are literally just love stories where people are wearing spandex and there's like a fuck ton of CGI. Like, people are not watching these movies to see this cast fight a bigger and bigger and bigger alien in the next installment. They're watching it because they want to see like Robert Downey Jr. be a father figure to Tom Holland. Like, that is why people go see those movies. It's why you get in, it's the emotional investment in these characters and in their relationships with each other and with like the people in their lives. So I genuinely do not know what the hang up is. It's very bizarre to me. I don't know. What do you know the hang up? What is
honestly,
it?
I don't know. I think I'm also kind of in the same boat as you, whereas I'm like really deep on loving it and being very unapologetic about it. Especially like if you look at the success of all of like Pride and Prejudice is like still a thing. Bridgerton is huge.
Yes.
One Day is huge. Like, I don't really care if people don't like it because there's so many people that do.
Yeah, way more people do. But then for some reason, the prevailing attitude is still like, this is uncool. And it's like, well, if more of us think it is cool, then doesn't that make it cool? And even like talking about Bridgerton, and I think One Day will probably end up being a similar thing. Because I'm now thinking more about like the Hollywood piece of things, it's weird because I feel like there are two ways that actors really get launched in a big way. And it's like you put them in a horror or you put them in a romance.
Yeah.
And it's like they're quote unquote undiscovered until that point. And so they're willing to do a horror romance, which are the two cheapest genres to make, I believe, because it's like.
No, I totally agree. With that.
Yeah. And then after that huge success, that person can, they can go do anything. And a lot of times they don't choose to keep doing romance, which is sad because it's kind of treated like a stepping stone. But it's like the reason that those breakout, I don't know, it's like this big breakout moment because actually so many people are like dying for more of this kind of story.
Well, there is Pierce Brosnan in Mamma Mia.
That's so true.
So I think a big thing that people lean into when they like romance is tropes and cliches. For example, in Funny Story, it incorporates a few tropes like fake dating, slow burn, forced proximity. What are your favorite tropes to read and write?
Ooh, I do love an enemies to lovers as like a reader and as a writer. And I think it's just because there's so much tension right off the bat. Like if you have two people who don't like each other, the opportunities for dialogue are just like so heightened. And the the banter is just like writes itself. And all the, you can put them in such ridiculous situations and everything is just funnier. So I really like that. I don't want to just like keep doing the same thing over and over again. But it is so much easier to write an enemies to lovers story than it is to write friends to lovers. Because with friends, you're like, well, I don't know. They like each other. They get along. Like, how do I create a story here? So I love that one. In historical romance, especially, I love A Marriage of Convenience. I know that there are contemporary romance authors who use that trope as well. I haven't really read any of them yet. I am aware of someone who's kind of working on one, so I'm excited about that. But I love A Marriage of Convenience. I love this because it kind of incorporates some of the best things about enemies to lovers and that slow burn thing where it's like these two people might not have anything in common with each other. You know, they're forced together by circumstance. And then to get to watch that slow unveiling of character and the bond that's being built, like kind of without either of them seeing it coming. I just think it's so beautiful and fun. Those are probably like my two favorites. As far as like the mini tropes that are kind of like forced proximity, for example, I am a sucker for one bed. It does work on me. And also, funnily enough, I have a close friend who years ago did go on a trip with a platonic straight male friend, and they did find themselves in a situation where they got to a hotel and there was one room left and there was one bed in it, and it did not end
in
love.
In real life.
I think at that point, in real life. And that's the thing about tropes. People are like, this is ridiculous, this would never happen. But tropes only exist because they do happen enough that when people are sitting down to write a story, they're like, oh, well, you know, I did have that one friend who did this thing. Like, that was pretty funny when that happened. So I don't know. I think tropes come from somewhere.
Yeah, it's a trope for a reason.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, if I give you four tropes, can you rank them from best to worst?
I can rank them from personal best to worst. Yes. Everybody is going to be mad.
Okay, the ones that I'm going to give you are enemies to lovers, friends to lovers, fake dating, and I'll give you a micro one, forced proximity.
Ooh, okay. I would do enemies to lovers, then fake dating, then forced proximity, and then friends to lovers, just because I think it's so hard. I know. Well, and that's the thing. There's always like a couple of things going on where it's like there's enemies for a second or like whatever. But ultimately, I guess they all end up as friends to lovers when I'm writing them, because I just don't know any other way for people to fall in love than like to become friends for
a second. I'd argue this one is a friends to lovers.
For sure. Like there's the fake dating. But again, it was hard to write because when you write two nice people who like each other, you're like, well, where's the story? And you have to dig really deep into the characters to figure out what their story is. Whereas if you're like, well, they just don't like each other, then, you know, the story feels like it writes itself a little more or something.
And similar to tropes, cliches, like I'm talking kissing in the rain or running into each other at the worst time. How do you feel about cliches? Do you try to lean in or avoid them?
Maybe a little bit of both. I mean, I think every once in a while it just feels right to do something, even when you know it's a cliche and it's been done a million times before. And the way that I approach that usually is if I get to a point where I'm like, well, it really kind of has to be this thing. This feels right, even though it's a cliche. It's just then you have the character acknowledge that it's a cliche, because that's also like happens in real life. You find yourself in a situation that you're like, this is so ridiculous. Nobody would believe that this actually happened to me. Like, I mean, or just like the thing of like when you, if you're back in your small hometown for the holidays and you go to the grocery store wearing the worst outfit of your life and you haven't showered in 6 days or whatever, it's like, yeah, you're going to run into like your high school crush or like your high school bully or whatever. Like stuff like that does happen. And when it happens in real life, you feel like your whole life is just a prank comedy show and the universe is laughing at you. So I feel like you can use cliches. You just have to acknowledge that they're cliche.
Yeah. I really like that romantic comedies like kind of highlight those parts of life, because I think that's really, it's
yeah,
cute.
Yeah. And I think like a lot of times the things that are funniest are like when things go wrong in unpredictable ways.
Yeah, exactly. So we asked our listeners to send in questions on Instagram. And I had to laugh at how many people wrote in to say, no questions, just tell her I love her.
Oh, I love you too.
It was very,
whoever
it was
you are.
So sweet. We got so many messages like that. How does it feel to have
so
such
nice,
a devoted, passionate readership?
There are times that it's like impossibly surreal. And then there are other times where I'm like, well, this is just like, I don't know. Like it's sometimes I have to remind myself that these are like strangers, that they're not my friends. Because in my mind, I'm just like, well, we all love the same things and that makes us friends. We all love love. It's so cool because it feels like I have wanted this job that I now have since I was 8 years old. Like I have always just been like, all I want to do is tell stories. And the fact that I have been given this ridiculous gift, but then these people feel like they've gotten a gift because I'm doing this thing. Like it just feels like this beautiful cycle that I wish for everyone in the world to find their version of this, where it's like, you're doing the thing that you love more than anything else in the world. And it's also like making a lot of people happy. That's just like the best thing that could possibly happen.
That's beautiful. So I'm going to read some of the questions that people sent in.
Okay.
The first question is from Roisin. She asks, do you think that men like your protagonists actually exist? Have you met them and where?
Oh my gosh. Well, I'm like, I have. I'm like, so one of them is my 90-year-old grandfather, though, and he's taken. Not sure if that's an issue for you, Jean. I think they do. I know it's hard out there. I'm not going to sugarcoat that. But there definitely are men like that. I mean, I think part of the reason that people who love my male protagonists love them so much, I think, is because they are human. I'm not ever writing someone who's perfect. They all have issues. And the only thing that differentiates them from anyone else with issues is that they know they have issues and they care that they have issues and they're working on it. And like, they respect the women in their lives. I don't know where you go to like find them. I don't know if there's like a factory, but they do exist, but I know it's hard out there.
The next question is from Anisha. She asks, would love to know which book character Emily has written that she sees herself in, if any.
Oh my gosh. All of them to some extent. I think sometimes my books become a weird little time capsule because when I read them after the fact, I can just so clearly see what I was going through and what I was thinking about. You know, as time goes on, I might feel more distant from some characters. But like when I wrote Beach Read, like January is crying so much in that book. And I also distinctly remember my editor suggesting us cutting her crying down because there were so many times that she was crying. And she was like, it kind of loses its impact after the 45th time. But at the time, I was just like really emotional. I was like weepy for whatever reason. Like I just was in a phase of being really in touch with my emotions. And yeah, so she's like this little time capsule. And like Gus is this little time capsule in a way too. I don't know. I relate to all of them. Like, actually, I don't super relate to Miles, I will say, from Funny Story. He is more like people I know and love, but I'm like not laid back in that way. But Daphne, I feel like I really relate to Daphne, where it's like you just blurt things out and you just don't know. Like, you know, at the time it seems fine. And then 2 hours later, you're like, I wonder if that's a problem that I said that. Like, was that, will people think I was being serious? Did they know I was kidding? Like, there's a lot of that dialogue in my life of like, was it obvious that I was joking?
So I end all of our author interviews with like a quick fire round to give people recommendations. What are you currently reading? That one's easy.
I'm reading Callahan Skogman's Blue Graffiti, which is his literary fiction debut, and it's really good so far. I'm like 40% of the way in. It's really different from what I usually read, but it's beautifully written.
What book would you recommend to a friend going through a hard time?
Ooh, it kind of depends on the what kind of hard time. My first thought is This Time Tomorrow by Emma Straub, which is beautiful, but it might be a little too heavy. And if it was somebody going through a really hard time, then maybe I would recommend a Talia Hibbert book or something like that, that would just like fully grip you and smother you with like hugs and kisses, you know?
And my last one is, what book deserves more hype than it gets?
Julia Whalen's Thank You for Listening, which is a very, very sexy, angsty, funny romantic comedy about two audiobook narrators.
Ooh.
So it's like wonderfully
that
meta.
Is so
yes,
meta.
It's so good. I love it.
Thank you so much, Emily, for taking the time to talk to me. I've had so much fun.
I know, me too. We'll do it again someday.
This podcast was recorded on Wurundjeri land. Always was, always will be Aboriginal land.
Oh, hi, it's Annabelle Lee and Louis Hansen here. We are your hosts of Everybody Has a Secret.
Woo!
Woo! We are here essentially just to let you know that we drop episodes every week now. Every damn Friday morning, we are in your ears.
That is so exciting. What a time to be in your ear holes. So essentially, each episode, we unpack the real life secrets of our listeners. So this is for everyone who loves, you know, just a little bit of gossip in their lives, which, let's be real, Annabelle, is all of us.
It's absolutely all of us. Don't lie. You all love gossip. So if you want to listen to our show, please do head to your favorite podcast app and listen now.
See you there.
Bye.